This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Coyotes do battle tomorrow, this afternoon at Bell MTS Place. The Moose are going to be back in action tomorrow afternoon as well. Lots of hockey going on at the arena this weekend.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the aforementioned Manitoba Moose, we're pleased to welcome to the program Moose defenseman Logan Stanley. Logan, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Logan. Obviously, brought you on to talk about your season so far. Got into the first game of the year, then you blocked a shot with your foot, missed a few games, but returned last night in the Moose victory. How was the foot feeling? How was it, and how does it feel to get back into the lineup after being out for a few games nursing that injury?
Yeah, it's feeling pretty good right now. I thought it felt good last night. I think it was one of those things where it just needs some time to settle down, and it obviously sucks when you get into the first game and then, you want to get into a routine and you kind of get, hurt and your routine kind of gets put to an end, but it was good to be back last night.
Logan, last night you were paired up with Moose captain Peter Stojkovic. I guess, how has it been playing with Stojkovic? I imagine that you guys are still trying to find your chemistry together.
Yeah, I think we worked a lot in practice this week, just kind of figuring out where we'll be on the ice and trying to build some chemistry. And I thought last night we played well together. I think, he's an older guy with a lot of experience. So, he's always talking on the ice and making it easier for young guys to play with him.
Now, Logan, after the game, I asked Eric Comrie about the saves that he made in the contest, and he actually pointed to yours on that 3-on-1, and he said it was like a road hockey save. He said that he thought that might end up being the best save of the game. And then I talked to Coach Vincent about your game, and he thought you were playing very well. He said, your sticks were, you're getting your stick in the passing lane, you're doing all the things right. How do you feel about your game, especially hearing that you're getting complimented by your goalie and your head coach?
Yeah, I thought it was a good way to come back from an injury, and I thought I played solid, and I think, all our D played well. So, that helped us with a big win last night, and good to get back into the win column.
Logan Stanley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Logan, obviously this is your first professional season, having made the transition from the Ontario Hockey League to the AHL. I know it's early, only two games in, but how is the transition going? What have you noticed the primary differences between the OHL level and the professional hockey level?
I think everyone's just as big and strong as you, and everyone can skate the same. I think in junior you get away with stuff because, being in your, fourth year, you're maybe a little bit ahead of the curve as some of the younger players in the league. But, when you come here, you got to be focused every shift because there's a lot of good hockey players out there. And if you're not playing well, you can get taken advantage of. So, I think just being sharp every game and guys are bigger, faster, and I thought I've adjusted well so far.
Logan, obviously you've got some good size. You're a foot taller than all three of us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And, I wanted to ask you, how much do you watch Tyler Myers, obviously another defenseman that's got the good size like you have, and how much do you try to watch what he does and try to model your game after? Because I know you can skate really well and you can jump up into the play. How much of a role model has he been for your game?
Yeah, I think, whenever the Jets games are on, I think me and my two roommates are watching the game, and I definitely watch him and other big guys like Buff and Troobs, and just kind of see their habits and how they play the game, how they defend the rush, and definitely try and pick up some stuff on that.
So, Logan, what have you learned from assistant coach Eric Dubois?
Well, he's a smart guy. He's been around the game a long time, and he handles us young guys really well. I think he's always coaching on the bench and in practice and always giving us pointers and showing video. So I think he does a really good job, and I think he manages the bench really well.
Logan Stanley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Moose defenseman Stanley has played two games so far this season. The Moose in action tomorrow afternoon. Logan, you know, the Moose defense, you look at it, it's got a good mix of young guys like yourself and Sammy Niku and Nelson Noje, and then they got some good veterans like Peter Stojkovic and a guy like Cam Schilling. You know, how is it sort of using those veteran players as a sounding board as you learn the game from the professional level?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, it was Stoyo's 200th game last night, and you know, by the end of the season, Shills might have over 500 if everything goes his way. So I think picking their brain in practice and kind of watching how they play the game on the ice, and just little details you can take from their game to implement into yours, and I think that'll help you out a lot. So just always being a student of the game and watching how they play.
Logan, you're obviously a physical defenseman. I remember watching, you know, some games that you played for the Windsor Spitfires and the Kitchener Rangers. Is one of the big learning curves in the American Hockey League maybe knowing when to use that physicality, just because the speed is different than the Ontario Hockey League?
Yeah, for sure. You have to be in position and moving to be physical, and there's a time and a place for it. So I think you got to know when to maybe just, you know, use your stick and try and knock the puck free, and know when the time is right to finish your check and separate the man from the puck. But I think that's still a big part of my game, and I think it's still a big part of the game in the NHL, being able to rub guys out and take the puck.
You know, Logan, professional sports, you always want to win the game, but one thing Coach Vincent talks about a lot is how important development is, especially with the Manitoba Moose, and that it's really, you know, an idea is that you guys are the feeder team to the Winnipeg Jets, and they want the big, you know, the Jets prospects like yourself, like the Sammy Nikus, like CJ Cease, like Mason Appleton, to really be, you know, a conduit to that big club with the Winnipeg Jets. But how nice is it knowing that you have a coach who, if there is a mistake, isn't going to bench you, isn't going to allow players to have that room to grow in their game?
Yeah, I think it's great. Pazzi handles the young guys really well. And you know, before the season started, we had a conversation just that we're going to work together and try and develop my game as much as we can this year and just always keep improving. And I think that starts in practice. You got to work every day in practice, and that'll translate into your games.
Logan Stanley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Logan, of course, is a defenseman for the Manitoba Moose. The Moose back in action tomorrow afternoon after being victorious last night. Logan, who do you still use sort of as a sounding board, maybe that isn't involved in the organization? Obviously, you talk to your players and you talk to the coaching staff, but in your own personal life, who do you still sort of break down the game with and sort of review your personal activities with?
I think I stick pretty close to family. I think, you know, my dad's always been involved in my hockey and my mom as well. So, you know, I'm always talking to those two about it, and especially my dad, who he used to play and kind of coached me all the way up. So I think, you know, I talk to him pretty much after every game and almost every day just about how things are going. And, you know, it's not a long conversation ever, but, you know, just – he asked how I felt about the game, and he gives me his opinion, and you know, we have a good relationship that way.
Logan, wanted to ask you about Brendan Lemieux. I mentioned, you know, the Windsor Spitfires, the team that you were drafted by and played for in the Ontario Hockey League before you were traded to the Kitchener Rangers. When you see that, you know, Brendan Lemieux is getting into the lineup, do you kind of give him a text or call him and really feel good that he's, you know, playing in the NHL now?
Yeah, I'm really happy for him. I think, you know, he's worked really hard to get where he's at. And I think he, you know, he deserves every bit of success that he has. So, you know, it's fun seeing him have success and seeing him out on the ice in the NHL.
You know, Logan, one thing that's different, Drew talked about the difference in the pro game from junior. And, you know, another one aspect of it is going from billet life to living on your own. And now you're, I believe you're living with J.C. LaPon and Nelson Noje, if I'm recalling correctly,
from
your conversation with Mitch. So so how is it living on your own, and how is dinner responsibility with those boys?
It's pretty good living on your own. I think you have a lot more responsibilities for sure, but, you know, having two roommates like those two is really good. It makes it easy for us to go home every day after the rink, whether – you know, you have a bad day or a good day, you go home and you got your buddies there to hang out with, and I think for the dinner side of things, we kind of do our own thing. We, you know, whatever you're feeling, you kind of cook it up and kind of stick to your own dishes. And like I said with Mitch, Noj might get stuck with a few extra dishes, but he doesn't seem to mind doing them. Keeps him busy.
Well, so Logan, I have a question for you. When JC has two goals like he did last night, do you guys do something special for him after the game?
No, not really. Maybe if he got a hat trick.
Last question for you, Logan, sort of along the same lines of you know, cooking responsibilities and roommates and whatnot. Fortnite, yay or nay?
That's nay for me. I'm not a big video game guy. Actually, none of us in the house really play video games at all. I think me and Noj play a little bit of NHL here and there, but that's about it in our house.
Well, there you go.
I'm with you, Logan. I'm an NHL guy. The Fortnite is, it's not my thing.
It's too complicated.
No, me neither.
Logan Stanley is a Manitoba Moose defenseman. The Moose back in action tomorrow afternoon. Logan, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck for the remainder of the season.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Logan. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Coyotes puck drop 3 p.m., a game you can hear live on this fine station. Right after us, of course, Huss and Rick, and then Kevin Owen friends for the pregame show starting at 2 o'clock this afternoon. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're too lazy like us to get up off of the couch, shop bernsteins.com. Order online, get it sent to your house, delivered to your house right away. Shop bernsteins.com for everything you know and you love from Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall. Dmitry Kulikov, we talked about him early on in hour number one of the program. A healthy scratch for 5 of the 7 games so far this season. He got into 2 games when Dustin Byfuglien was out of the lineup. Is Dmitry Kulikov now the Jets' 7th defenseman, and has he been passed on the depth chart by both Joe Morrow and Ben Chiarot?
Yeah, Drew, it's unfortunate, you know, that Kulikov hasn't got into more games early on this year, because you know, the last year he was a second pairing defenseman for the Jets, and obviously at times, you know, he moved down to the third pair, but Tyler Myers was a guy that he played with a lot. So, I mean, right now, with the way Joe Morrow and Ben Chiarot are playing, I mean, he has been passed over. Obviously, Joe Morrow came over from the Montreal Canadiens prior to last year's trade deadline, mm-hmm. and, you know, I didn't expect Kulikov to be a healthy scratch, but, you know, right now, Tucker Poolman's in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose. Tucker Poolman's a guy that I thought would start the season as the 7th or 8th defenseman for the Jets. So the Jets have a lot of depth. You know, we just talked to Logan Stanley. I mean, Logan Stanley's a guy that, you know, his goal is to eventually get a spot up with the big club. And right now, you know, the Jets, even though, you know, the left side isn't as strong as the right side, you know, with Buff and Trouba and Myers, when Dustin Byfuglien, you know, went down, I mean, Dmitry Kulikov stepped right into that role with Ben Chiarot. And, you know, they had to obviously move over to the right side. But, I mean, as it stands right now, I mean, Kulikov, I don't know if you want to say that he's in Paul Maurice's doghouse, but Kulikov had injury problems last year. And we talked to Jason Bell about it during the first hour. I mean, Kulikov was a guy that wasn't healthy for all of the playoffs. He wasn't a guy that was able, you know, to enjoy the playoff success of the Jets. And you wonder, you know, if he's maybe having some of those, you know, nagging symptoms from the injuries. And I don't know about that. But right now, I think it's a problem. I mean, you've got a defenseman that's in the second year of a 3-year deal, making $4.3 million a year, around $4.3 yeah. million dollars a year, and he's not playing. And, you know, you wonder, you know, if it's an issue of, you know, his commitment or his fitness level, something. I mean, because this was a guy that was brought in, again, It wasn't to be a depth defenseman. It was to be your second pairing left side defenseman. And especially, Drew, now that Toby Enstrom, you know, has moved on, he's no longer with the Jets. I had Kulikov penciled in on that left side, whether you want to say it's on the second pair or the third pair. But yeah, Joe Morrow has passed him, and Paul Maurice is a big fan of Ben Sherratt. And I think Sherratt has played well. Sherratt and Buff have been a very solid pair for the Jets. And we know that they have played together, Drew, for, you know, chunks of the last, what, 3 years now?
Sure.
So, you know, who comes out? Is it Ben Sherratt or Joe Morrow? If Kulikov goes back into the lineup, I would expect it to be Joe Morrow who comes out.
Well, let me ask you, Dave. I mean, is this a function? You know, Kulikov was solid, I say, up until he suffered the injury last season after, you know, in his first year as a member of the Jets. I think he wasn't flashy, but I don't think the Jets expected him to be flashy at all. So, you know, what is his hang-up? Is it lingering injuries? You know, the fact that he's missed really a lot of the last few seasons in suffering from injuries going back to his days with the Buffalo Sabres. You know, how does he regain confidence, if it's a confidence issue, if he's not playing in the lineup?
Well, no, and that's the fair point, Drew. I mean, look, he played 62 games last year, 47 the year before that. And, you know, it looks like he won't play. We'll see what happens this year. And, of course, you know, as Paul Maurice would often point to, there's always going to be injuries, so I'm sure he'll get an opportunity to get back in the lineup. But that's what it's going to take, it looks like. It looks like it's going to take Dmitry Kulikov having, you know, one of his players ahead of him go down before he'll get a chance to kind of assert himself and show that he needs to be in this lineup. And that's the reality, right? I mean, the problem is he got what, into one game so far?
Two
games. So really, it's not a huge amount of time. But again, it's a function of, to your question, as to whether there was a lingering injury, you know, or, you know, still being bothered from whatever was dealing with in the off season and from last season. You know, he comes back after the end of the regular season and into the playoffs, plays that final playoff game.
Yeah, the game
for the Jets. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a curious decision that he played because, you know, he'd been injured. But anyways, he gets into that game and then.
Wasn't Toby Enstrom a healthy scratch?
Yeah, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, right? Regarding Enstrom's relationship with the organization. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he was going to be back.
No, but I mean,
probably
like,
not. But
the point is that he took off right after.
Yeah, remember he didn't stay for locker cleanout day. Yeah. He was gone before anybody could talk to him. He was obviously pissed off about that.
Yeah, and so you had Kulikov inserted into that one game, and then, you know, obviously we don't follow these guys in the off season in the sense that we were not, you know, monitoring them and seeing.
We don't
exactly,
see his rehab,
right? So we don't know how he's doing and what he's choosing to do and how he's rehabbing himself. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, clearly the coaching staff has him in the seventh defensive spot.
Yep.
So again, until he can get into that lineup for, you know, a significant period of time, I just don't see him like overtaking anybody, because what's he going to do? He can't do it in practice. You're not going to do it in practice. So it's really going to take an injury for him to get in. And then once there is, that's his opportunity.
And Dave, sorry, go ahead, Drew.
Or quickly to that point, or a game where one of Sherratt or Joe Morrow really struggle.
It'd have to be a big game. Like, I just think that,
like, they'd have to be exposed badly in one or two games.
Yeah, I think it's, if you have two successive games that you can point to, that one of those two guys has a tough game, then I can see it happening.
And even though it's really unfortunate that Kulikov is a regular healthy scratch right now, if you're Paul Maurice and Dmitry Kulikov is your seventh defenseman, I mean, that's a real position of strength, right? Kulikov is a former first-round pick. But I think the optics of having a guy who's making that type of money, he's one of your higher paid defensemen. He's obviously not making the same amount of money as Dustin Byfuglien or Jacob Trouba.
No, $4.33 million
a year. He's, what, the third or fourth highest paid defenseman on the team?
He would certainly be the third. He's the fourth highest paid behind Byfuglien, Trouba, and Myers.
Right,
yes.
So there you go. And, you know, that's a position of strength right now for the Jets. But I think then you have to ask yourself, well, at what point, as Dave mentioned, you want a guy getting into games. Dmitry Kulikov's not getting sent down to the American Hockey League. He's on a one-way contract. And Paul Maurice rarely uses seven defensemen. You've seen Guy Boucher do that in Ottawa quite often.
Mm-hmm.
Maurice doesn't use seven defensemen, and I don't think you're going to call Tucker Pullman up knowing that he's behind Kulikov. So as far as I'm concerned, they're going to stick with two extra forwards and a defenseman, as opposed to, you know, two defensemen and a forward right now.
They have the open roster spot currently, which everyone is sort of, you know, that's the Christian Vasilainen who was sent down to the Moose. And if they call him back up, it's not like they have to make a swap there. He can just come right back into the Jets' open roster spot currently.
Right. You've got Nick Petan and Dmitry Kulikov, and it's very easy for the Jets to call someone up from the Manitoba Moose, especially when both teams are at home. But you're right. It's something to keep monitoring. I expect Kulikov to get back into the lineup sooner rather than later. I don't think you saw that last year with Marco Dano, and we know what happened with Marco Dano. He was a healthy scratch for the majority of last year and obviously placed on waivers. I'm not saying that Kulikov is going to be placed on waivers, but you have to get him into games. He's a veteran defenseman. He's under contract for another year after this year. I don't think you want him sitting out 40 games this year.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about Jets defenseman Dmitry Kulikov, who's been a healthy scratch.
And the reason why I say that, Drew, is because I don't think he's going to be effective if he's a healthy scratch for half of the year. Oh. Or whatever it is, 30 games, 40 games, whatever. I mean, that's what he's on pace for right now. He's only played 2 games.
Yeah, he's on pace for a lot less than the 30 or 40 games, but you're absolutely right that, you know, it's hard to improve if you're not playing, but you need somebody else to struggle or get injured before you get that opportunity. Let me ask you guys this.
And one of the hardest injuries, you know, just quickly to recover from is back surgery. Sure. We've heard that over the years with hockey players. Wow. I mean, and you wonder if that's kind of, you know, he's lost a step or, you know, it's something that is really bothering him.
You usually don't bounce back from a back surgery. It's not like your back is going to return to how it was when you were 18, 19, 20
years
old.
Those years with Mario Lemieux? I mean,
yeah, of course. You know, back surgeries are never an easy recovery, never mind multiple back surgeries, which is what he's had. Let me ask you guys this. He's got $4.33 million left this season and next season. If this season continues as it started, is he a buyout candidate in the offseason?
I mean, I don't think it's a ridiculous question.
Well, they're very much, they very much have salary cap concerns, the Winnipeg Jets do.
I would probably say that the likelihood of a buyout is probably low with Dmitry Kulikov. And I think the Jets still want Kulikov to be part of the team. I would expect a trade to be more likely than a buyout. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that Kulikov is going to be traded. But if you're asking me the probability of a trade versus the probability of a buyout,
who's acquiring a oft injured or
the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, I mean, you know, unless you're sweetening the deal.
Well, I think there's a lot of teams, Drew, prior to the trade deadline who are looking kind of for a depth defenseman, right?
If you're at $4.3 million a season.
Well, you're only paying a part of that salary
all of next year.
Well, right, but then, I mean, you could always move him again. I don't think there's a massive trade market, if that's what you're asking, but I do think there is a trade market. I think there's probably a few teams out there, like, I think of the Washington Capitals, for example. I mean, you want a guy that could possibly be your depth defenseman in the playoffs. I'm just saying, I'm just spitballing here.
Sure. 'Cause
you asked the question.
I did.
And, you know, sure, he could be a buyout candidate. I don't think many people thought this time last year Steve Mason was going to be a buyout candidate, but it's all speculation
For a team that's, you know, like I said, very conscious of the salary cap, it would save him $2.9 million next year, because what you do is you take two-thirds of the contract and spread it over the remaining year plus one more year.
I still think you want Kulikov, you know, part of your roster, because you don't know what's going to happen with Jacob Trouba. Tyler Myers is a pending UFA.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
Sherratt's UFA.
I don't necessarily know that you want, you know, half of your defense turning over from this year.
If you think about it, you've only got Byfuglien and Morrissey signed for next year. You've got Kulikov, who we're talking about now, and then you've got Trouba, as he just said, as an RFA. Myers and Sherratt are both UFAs. Now, assuming Poolman makes a jump next year, potentially, and Niku makes a jump next year, that's really only just two additional guys. So you're still going to need some defense back there.
In the short term, though, you have to get him into the lineup, as far as I'm concerned. And I think if you're Paul Maurice, you're cognizant of that. But I just think, you know, having a veteran defenseman like Kulikov, you know, sitting out all of these games, I don't think it sits well.
I'm sure it doesn't sit well. I'm sure Paul Maurice is certainly aware of that. I mean, did you notice him in the two games that he played when Byfuglien was out of the lineup? I mean, I didn't really notice him pro or con. But then again, last year, how many games did you really notice Dmitry Kulikov for?
Well, right, Kulikov's not a guy that's going to
jump off the page,
pick up big points. But
that's not a criticism necessarily.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, though. Sometimes if you don't notice a player, maybe they're doing their job.
Yeah, I wasn't
especially with his type of game. Yeah, like, as you just said,
his type of game is very just sort of simple. You don't expect him to put up much offensively. And, you know, previously in his career, when he was first started off with the Florida Panthers, he had more offensive upside. But you know, that part of his game seems to have disappeared. And he certainly doesn't get those opportunities with the Jets playing in a more defensive, time on ice situation, not relied on for his offensive side of the game.
Right. Yeah. Kulikov's never going to be out on the first or second power play. You know, he's not going to play, you know, the type of minutes that, you know, Buff or Morrissey or Trouba plays. So, you know, I thought he was all right. What are we talking about? The game against Edmonton and the game against Carolina, right? I mean, yeah. The game against Edmonton, I mean, that.
That third period was a disaster for everybody.
Right. It wasn't a great period for the Jets in general. So, you know, I just think going forward, it's something to watch. And again, I don't think that, you know, Kulikov is going anywhere, because I like Kulikov's game. I was pleasantly surprised with Kulikov last year. And as you mentioned at the top of the segment, coming off of that year in which he missed all of those games with Buffalo, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, mm-hmm. Sure, he's a first-round pick, and, you know, he had some good seasons with the Florida Panthers, but he was a bit of a wild card. And I thought he was a steadying presence back there with Tyler Myers. I really liked the chemistry they had.
Yeah.
And I was assuming that, you know, Kulikov was probably going to be on that third pair with Tyler Myers, but we'll have to wait and see what happens, because right now, Ben Chiarot and Joe Morrow are getting all the ice time, mm-hmm. and, you know, Kulikov, unfortunately, isn't.
Right now, he is just an expensive, healthy scratch. When we come back, we discuss a possibility to end some of the impasses we're seeing with rookie players coming off of their entry-level contracts. Is it time to make those players arbitration eligible? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
But in Buffalo, he shot and he ripped it over the net. Great one-timer, put it over the goal. Wheeler again controls the puck back for Laine. A shot, he scores! Patrick Laine didn't waste any time with a second opportunity. He didn't miss either. It's 1-0 Winnipeg on a power play goal.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit Linden Market Dental Center.com. Earlier this week, Nick Ritchie of the Anaheim Ducks finally agreed to a contract with the Ducks. We'll talk about the details on that contract a little bit later on in the show. But it was interesting because Nick Ritchie is one of those players, much like Josh Morrissey was earlier this season, where he's coming off of his entry-level contract and he doesn't have any arbitration rights whatsoever. And so Michael Tracos, a good friend of the program who you hear always on our show, sort of wrote about what's going to happen next season, in that there's an exceptional amount of talented young players coming off of their entry-level contracts with no arbitration rights. You've heard, of course, Austin Matthews. We know Patrick Laine here in Winnipeg. You know, Mikko Rantanen and Sebastian Aho in Colorado and Carolina, respectively. And I think it's not so
Braden
much...
Braden Point
of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mitch Marner
of the Leafs as well. Kyle Connor here of Winnipeg.
Yep.
This is more of an issue, I think, less so for the Laines and the Matthews, who are established superstars at this point in time. It's more of an issue for those guys who are coming off their entry-level contracts but haven't really been able... They've shown flashes. Guys like Brock Besser in Vancouver. You know, Braden Point, another guy in Tampa Bay who's certainly shown flashes of the skill necessary.
I wouldn't say flashes for either of those players. I mean, Braden Point is the second-line center for the Lightning, and Brock Besser should have been a Calder Trophy finalist last year. So I don't know if you call that flashes, Drew, but I think your point is more so the second tier of players.
Right, that second tier of players where, and you see it right now, and this isn't going to be a segment about William Nylander, because frankly, how much more talk about William Nylander can people handle?
He continues to lose money.
Well, sure.
I just don't understand why he just doesn't sign.
I mean, the problem is, and so Michael Tracos talks about this, that this is a guy who's got no options.
He's got no leverage.
He's got no leverage, and this is the only time...
He doesn't have hand.
The only time that players have any leverage, or pardon me, that the teams have any leverage, is in this exact situation. This 1 year after their entry-level contracts, before they're arbitration eligible. Now, the player's going to say, why do I want to sign a multi-year contract unless you're going to really, you know, pay me for my potential? Whereas the team is saying, we don't want you to sign for your potential. We want you to sign a multi-year contract based on what you've accomplished so far. So you can see where the logjam is. And Tracos, you know, puts on his prognostication hat and says, next year might be a year of reckoning when it comes to all these talented players coming off of their entry-level contracts. And is this an impasse? Is this a situation the NHL needs to find a resolution to when it comes to the next CBA negotiations?
Yes, absolutely, Drew. And I'm glad that you wanted to talk about this today because I think this is going to be a huge part of the next CBA negotiations. And I think that's why Michael Tracos is writing about it. And Mark Guy of Newport Sports Management was interviewed for this piece. Alan Walsh of Octagon Hockey was interviewed for this piece. And obviously the agents want their players coming out of entry-level deals to have arbitration rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, for obvious reasons. There's the potential to make more money, right? And it's obviously, you know, more of a fair process, I would argue. But then, you know, Kenny Holland, longtime general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, mm-hmm. is quoted in the piece, and he says, I don't buy this at all because in the last round of CBA negotiations, Dave, the free agency age dropped down to 25, right? So that was one of the concessions that the owners gave to the players.
Yeah.
And you know, forget about all the, you know, the hockey-related revenue stuff and the escrow. But, I mean, when you're talking about the negotiations, I definitely think that these players should have arbitration rights. I mean, I'm with the agents here, but then you wonder, you know, is that now going to be a huge issue for the owners? And they're saying, well, you know, now the salaries of these younger players are going to rise up even more. Because I agree with you, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, they're going to make big bucks, right? $10 million, $11 million a year.
And their teams want to sign them to long-term deals. And they have no concerns about their future.
They're happy to open up the bank account for these players, these generational players.
Mm-hmm.
And even though a guy like Braden Point, you know, it's a little bit tougher to come to that magic number, right? Is he a $5 million a year player? Is he a $6 million a year player? Connor, another guy, you know, he won't be at that top end of salaries, but I would pay Kyle Connor $6 million a year, but maybe the Jets only want to pay him $5 million a year. I don't know. So I think this is going to be very interesting to see because we know that there's at least 2 years left on the current CBA, and then there's the option of renewing, pardon me, yes, renewing, and then there's obviously, you know, the option of
opting out
and then renegotiating the CBA. But
let me ask you this, Dave. Sorry, Ezzy, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Let me ask you this. From a team perspective, I mean, you know, arbitration is going to be inflationary. It's going to make more money for all the players, et cetera, et cetera. From a team perspective, you know, don't you think the Toronto Maple Leafs, if arbitration was an option here, wouldn't mind taking William Nylander or the Jets next year? Let's you know, speculate that there's an impasse with Kyle Connor, and I'm completely speculating. Don't you think the team wouldn't mind having arbitration as an option, at least for that 1 year?
No.
In that you can get the player at least onto your roster. You don't have to be playing this song and dance routine into the middle of October like the Jets were with Trouba a couple years ago.
I'll say it again. No. I'll tell you why.
Please.
Losing leverage. You never want to lose leverage in a negotiation. And so I think from the Jets' perspective, from the Leafs' perspective, from any team's perspective, and again, look, the Leafs are winning. So it's easy to let William Nylander sit at home because you're winning. You don't need him right now. You know, the Jets, but at the end of the day, I got to tell you, I think Toronto would still adopt the same tact because from their perspective, you cannot be giving in. You're saying to the guy, we don't think you're worth $8 million. We're not going to give you $8 million. And I'll tell you, though, because the point is that this is when you have the leverage to keep that contract the way where it is.
But you keep that – I mean, but there's no obligation that you have to – that Nylander – I mean, clearly he doesn't want to sign a multi-year contract based on what Toronto's currently offering him.
Mm-hmm.
So both teams, you know, the Leafs feel he's worth X or the Jets feel this player is worth X and the player feels he's worth Y. Let's go to arbitration for the 1 year and then we can begin, you know, you get him into the lineup and then he can prove himself again. I just don't know why they don't have arbitration for that only that 1 year period.
And I think it's because of what Ken Holland mentioned. It's because of the free agency age lowered by 6 years.
Sure.
So, and it's mentioned in the article by Michael Tracos. I mean, he points to Andreas Athanasiou, who signed a one-year contract after holding out, and then he got his arbitration rights.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is that not an option for William Nylander? He can sign a one-year contract, and then he gets arbitration rights. But I think the point is, that was a concession that was given to the NHLPA, lowering the free agency age. And it wasn't, you know, one for one. There were other, each side got things that they wanted, right? But I think the point is that he's saying that some of these players wouldn't have got the big money that they're getting on long-term contracts because they would have become free agents later in their careers, as opposed to earlier in their careers.
Sure, if the free agency age was back at 31, absolutely. But right. I mean, if you're talking about only 1 year difference, I mean, they're arbitration eligible right after that 1 year.
Well, that's why I'm saying I personally have no problem with that. Gary Bettman and Donald Fear, Bill Daly, they don't care what I think. I mean, it's all about negotiation when it comes around to that, right? And I think you know that the NHLPA is going to push hard for that, but then maybe does the NHL ask for that free agency age to be pushed up a year?
Well, maybe
8 years, 26 years old.
Maybe that's the trade-off, but I mean, I just don't see what the disadvantage is. I don't see an overwhelming disadvantage to a team for that player being arbitration eligible immediately after his entry-level contract.
Because they
contract.
Have that option of going to arbitration and making more money. I mean, the owners...
Only if they...
Like Dave said, that's more leverage for the player.
Well, only if they win the argument. Yeah, go to arbitration and you present both sides.
It's risk and reward,
but
for
Drew,
sure.
The whole point is, wouldn't you rather, if you're talking from an ownership perspective, wouldn't you rather the person that you're negotiating with have no leverage? As opposed to some leverage, because the whole point of an arbitration, but it doesn't matter. You're saying the player, the owners have said, we've given up on X. X being, as he said, Ken Holland mentioned, the age from 31 to 25. If they're giving up on X, why are they also going to give up Y? They've already given up X. They're not going to say, okay, you know, we gave up that. We're also going to give you this. Because from their perspective, again, this is their opportunity to say, this is when we've got control of you.
Sure.
And so it's the way the contracts are negotiated. They're allowed to have control of the player. And then until that time, as the player becomes a free agent and can dictate where they want to play, then that's their prerogative. But until then, I mean, it's, and the whole point of, you have to understand is the team develops the asset. So I don't really have a problem with the team having control of the asset, because the fact of the matter is that this is a player that the team has developed in theory. Like they brought him through junior. Well, they didn't develop in junior, but you know what I mean? Like drafted them, put him into their system, and now they're just getting them to a point where they're like, okay, well, we want to see what we have. I think that they're entitled. Now, maybe that's because I'm a shill for ownership, apparently, but that's just my philosophy.
No, and I think the other thing, Drew, you have to think about, and again, I'm thinking about this more from, you know, the team perspective. When players go to arbitration, you know, mm-hmm. they can't get long-term contracts.
Right.
So I think if players coming out of their entry-level deals, group two players, group mm-hmm. two free agents,
mm-hmm.
then the likelihood of more short-term deals becomes very high. And that's not something teams want, because they're already going to lose some of these players when they become closer to 25 years old.
When you sign a guy to a long-term deal, don't you want to have as much body of evidence as possible? And I think that's what Tracos is saying in the article, is that you know, a lot of these teams are going to be faced with a dilemma, you know, when these guys come off their entry-level deals, that they might not have a necessary body of evidence to really be confident in signing them to a 5, 6, 7, 8-year contract. Whereas if they were, and that's almost what always happens when they come off the entry-level deals now, because there's not the availability of another 1-year arbitration window where you can see them and then decide what they want to do in terms of a long-term contract.
Well, it's like a Kyle Connor, for example.
Yeah.
Can Kyle Connor replicate what he's doing on a second line
without Wheeler and
Blake
Scheifele.
Wheeler and Mark Scheifele? I mean, it's a valid question. We haven't seen the evidence of it. So what your argument would suggest is that would give you more opportunity potentially to see some more evidence of Kyle Connor driving a line and meriting more money. Now, the only thing, last point I would make is arbitration can get contentious, and maybe they're trying to stave that off one more year.
You know, yes, certainly that's the adage, is that arbitration is contentious. I mean, who knows, you know, time can heal all wounds, but I'm not sure about that. But you're absolutely right. It's just an interesting idea and an interesting dilemma that's coming up next season. I thought the Tracos article was worthwhile, and it'll be interesting, God forbid, when we have to watch the CBA negotiations again, when, you know, we're trying to do shows in the middle of January in the midst of a 6-month lockout like we were a few years back. Let's all hope we never have to experience that again. When we come back, concussions are on the rise in goaltenders in the NHL. We'll talk about that, talk about what's happening and what the NHL can do to mitigate it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
13 goaltenders were diagnosed with 15 concussions last season. That's as many as the three previous seasons combined. So the big question is, was last season a one-off or an anomaly? And the other big question is why?
TSN reporter Frank Saravelli talking about an issue that sort of, to be honest to you, has flown under my radar. Concussions on the rise among NHL goaltenders. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Coyotes will do battle at 3 o'clock this afternoon, a game you, of course, can hear live on TSN Radio 1290 and watch it on TSN 3. You know, an interesting phenomenon. I guess it makes sense now that I think back to last season with both Steve Mason and Michael Hutchinson suffering concussions on shots to the helmet in practice. And that's sort of why, you know, goaltenders often, they do get upset if a teammate goes too high on them in practice. How significant an issue is this that, you know, that concussions are on the rise among goaltenders? 15 diagnosed concussions sustained by 13 goaltenders last season. That's the exact same number as the previous three seasons combined.
Yeah, it has to be a problem for the NHL and the NHLPA. And Greg Wyshynski, aka Puck Daddy, wrote about this for ESPN. And, you know, there was a quote in the article from Ben Bishop, and he was saying that, you know, with the new goalie equipment, the new, you know, the new protection, the lack of protection that they're having on their arms. He's saying it's like wearing a shin guard on your arm, and you know the pucks are starting to really hurt them more, so they're almost compensating for that. So I think that's a concern when some of the equipment changes that have come in are starting to be, you know, almost loathed by the goaltenders. And when you're talking about the concussions, I mean, I think, you know, the NHL does a good job at protecting its goaltenders, but you know, these types of statistics, I mean, they're really concerning. You look at Corey Crawford last year, and, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks season was basically done after Corey Crawford went out of the lineup. Now, you know, the Jets, they have some experience with the concussions. Steve Mason had multiple concussions last year. Obviously, you know, they didn't have to do with the, you know, the changes in equipment. But, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, the hockey is a fast game played by big men, and you know you're going to have injuries at every position. But you know those numbers are alarming when you're starting to see those types of spikes in concussions amongst injuries. I mean, you might have to look at making some different changes to the equipment. Maybe bringing back. I'm not saying you necessarily want to bring back bigger equipment, but you want to look at maybe, you know, different changes that you could possibly make. You know, whether it's to, you know, the masks or the like, you know, because it's something that's obviously, you know, become a bigger problem.
Well, in the article, Frank Saravelli's article for TSN.ca, he talks about how, you know, helmet equipment for goaltenders hasn't really changed very much over the last number of years, Dave. The helmets have been very similar to how they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But we know that the sticks have changed. Players are shooting the puck a lot harder, a lot faster than they were before. Is the NHL sort of behind the curve when it comes to goaltender equipment, specifically technology and the helmet?
Well, I mean, I haven't done an analysis on goalie helmets from this year versus what they were 10, 15 years ago. But but I think it's fair to say that, you know, it probably hasn't adjusted. And I think what's interesting is if you see in the NFL, because concussions are such a big factor there. There was a really interesting video I watched, I think last week or the week before, about the technology with helmets and how they're adjusting to hits to protect the brain to ensure that, you know, to at least, if they're not going to be able to prevent all concussions, to try and mitigate it so you can reduce the number of concussions that these players are experiencing. Because we know how, you know, the long-term ramifications of concussions, what kind of impact that can have on players' lives moving forward, even short-term and long-term, obviously. So I think it's definitely something that the NHL needs to take very seriously because, look, I mean, the fact of the matter is goalies aren't complaining because they're allowing more goals in the net. They're complaining because they're getting hurt as a result of the equipment they're using. And in an industry that's worth billions of dollars. This is not something that you can take lightly. I don't think it's, if you have a segment of your, you know, workforce that is talking and saying, listen, you need to take this seriously. We're having problems both from shots, whether that are hitting the guys' heads and from shots that are hitting in the bodies and having an impact that they weren't previously. Well, then that's an issue, and that's something that the NHL has to take very seriously.
The current state is that the masks, and this is from Frank Saravelli's article, the masks NHL goalies wear must only pass a safety standard test that was established back in 2014-15, which is, you know, 4 years ago now. That test only measures how a mask physically holds up to pucks shot at 75 miles an hour or collisions, not the impact of shots on the head. It seems to me, to my point earlier that I asked you about, it seems to me that the NHL is almost being reactive, you know, certainly are being reactive to this problem as opposed to, you know, being on the forefront of how their goaltenders' helmets react to blistering hard rubber coming at it at higher than 75 miles an hour.
Right. And it goes back to what I said before. I mean, you know, I mentioned, you know, Ben Bishop's quote in the article by Greg Wyshynski talking about, you know, the chest protectors and, you know, the reduction in the chest size, the chest pad size and the arm protection as well. And Frank Saravelli mentions it in the article. He says the big change seems to be an increase in the number of concussions resulting from shots off the mask. Of the 15 concussions, 10 were as a result of shots off the helmet. Mm-hmm. So I think this is something that Kay Whitmore and the NHL has to look at. I mean, it's not the chest protectors and it's not, you know, the padding on the arms. It's the shots and, you know, the sticks that the goaltenders are getting on the mask. So, you know, if that's increasing the padding or, you know, I'm not an equipment expert, but, you know, I think that's where you have to start. You have to start looking at the goalie masks and the protection that you get from the masks.
Interesting comment from Andrew Hammond. Andrew Hammond, who of course plays for the AHL's Iowa Wild. You know, Hammond believes that the increase in quote unquote friendly fire headshots, you know, when a teammate hits a goaltender in the head in practice, doesn't come from a lack of respect, but comes as a byproduct of an ultra competitive environment. Here's the quote from Andrew Hammond. Some guys just don't know how to let their foot off the gas. They are fighting every day to try and make it and stay in the NHL. You know, an interesting comment there, you know, that he's saying, you know, it used to be sort of, you would never shoot high on your own goaltender. That was just the rule of thumb. You never go high on your own goaltender. Andrew Hammond said,
well, that hasn't changed.
Well, except he's saying it has because guys don't know how to turn it off. They don't deliberately try and injure a guy, but they're always trying to impress. They're always trying to, you know, improve your game in practice. And the byproduct of that has been goaltenders getting injured by guys not knowing to not go bar down and accidentally hitting a goaltender in the head.
Yeah, and the stick technology has changed, but I mean, it's the masks that you have to look at.
Absolutely.
And you have to increase the padding and you have to improve that technology as far as I'm concerned. Because I mean, even though Ben Bishop's talking about, you know, getting more bruises from pucks on his shoulders and up in his chest, I mean, that's not going to give you a concussion. It's taking a shot in the head or you know, you get a stick in the head. Remember James Neal and Connor Hellebuck in that game that goal shouldn't have counted.
Sure.
So I mean, I think that's what the NHL, Kay Whitmore, you know, the goaltending safety department, that's what they have to look at.
Interesting tweet just came into us from One Canadian, One Beaver, One on Twitter. Obviously a great Twitter name if you ever had one. One of the reasons is the change in goaltending style. It's a good point. We were once taught to play the position on our skates. Now they play on their knees and the head is in the shooting zone at the bullseye, so there are more injuries. I think that's actually a pretty valid point. You know, it used to be, you know, the head, if you're up on your skates and you're not in the butterfly style, the head is above the net, so there's no chance. A guy's not shooting and hitting you up there. Now everyone's in the butterfly style, protecting the lower part of the net, so the head is right in the target zone. I think that's actually a very valid point coming via our Twitter feed.
Yeah, it's a good point there. And, you know, for those who haven't read the article, you know, Frank Saravelli does mention that, you know, equipment manufacturers have looked at denser foams being added to goalie masks, and then they've also increased Kevlar and resin reinforcement in the outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, some of the hockey companies have started, you know, to add, you know, the denser foam and all of that, but I think it's, you know,
they're playing catch up, though.
It needs to be taken, you know, even further, because I think we know that, you know, regular player helmets, you know, the technology has improved a lot over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, but I think, you know, the goalie masks, it's
lagging behind,
yeah.
In the NHL, which should be at the forefront,
yep,
Actually, the NHL and the NHLPA, got to put the blame on the PA as well. They should be at the forefront of equipment and making sure their players are wearing the best possible, most protective equipment within the rules. Obviously, they don't want the Michelin man in net. But the fact that they're just now playing catch-up when it comes to optimizing a helmet against concussions and against injuries proves to me that both sides have dropped the ball to some degree and that they're well behind the curve when it comes to protecting their players as much as possible.
I think they'll get it right because these latest statistics, you know, the rise of concussions amongst goaltenders, I think, you know, it has to change.
You would think that they should make it a priority. I mean, it sounds like Kay Whitmore and his group are going to report back to the NHL and some, at the All-Star game in January in San Jose. But you hope that they can come to create something to mitigate the effect of these concussions, because we know how significant it is losing a starting goaltender for a lot of teams in the NHL. When we come back, Cam Robinson is going to join us. We'll touch on what's happening in the fantasy side of the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, coming up at 12 noon this afternoon, we're going to have Hustler and Rick getting you set for the Jets and the Coyotes, and then Kevin Owen Friends with the pregame show coming up at 2 o'clock before puck drop at 3.
Is Huss back?
I don't know. Is Huss away?
No, he was out with the upper body injury. It was Jim Toth yesterday. It was Brandon Ruwicki yesterday, and then it was Jim Toth 2 days ago.
Oh, I missed that, unfortunately. What's wrong with Huss?
Upper body injury. Concussion? Did he get shot off the helmet?
I hate to break it to you. At this point of the season, we don't discuss injuries.
That's right. It's just upper body, lower body?
Simply an upper body.
Alrighty. Well, this segment of the show brought to our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's in town. You know him from Workaholics, and you know him from I'm Dying up here. Eric Griffin in town, two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets going very quickly. Be sure to get them at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Is I'm Dying Up Here the story of Illegal Curve?
That was very clever there, Ezzy, I gotta say. We're going to get Cam Robinson on the line, talk a little bit about the fantasy side of the game that we all know and love so much. I believe producer Alex is doing a great job getting a hold of him. Ed, you're going to say something there? You're motioning at me?
Well, Cam's actually going to start coming on monthly.
Ah,
the third Saturday of every month. We obviously do our fantasy hockey preview show at the beginning of each year, but Cam's going to start coming on monthly to do a fantasy hockey segment.
Well, we're looking forward to that, and we'll bring in Cam Robinson now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Dauber Hockey, we're pleased to welcome to the program Cam Robinson, talk a little bit about the fantasy side of life. Cam, good morning. Appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, fellas.
Our pleasure, Cam. I want to start with a player in the division of the Winnipeg Jets who's off to a tremendous start. That's Colorado Avalanche winger Mikko Rantanen. 13 points in 7 games. He leads the NHL in assists. Can he keep this pace up? And to your mind, is Mikko Rantanen still underrated in fantasy hockey?
Oh, he absolutely is, for sure. The kid's for real, so he maybe had the quietest 84-point season as a 21-year-old in recent memory last year, so he just didn't get nearly enough ink after such a great performance. A lot of that credit was given to Nate McKinnon. But he's in that elite spot with McKinnon. They're dynamic together. They have the speed, the skill. They seem to work very, very well together. Now, whether or not he can keep up this type of production is one thing, but I think he can definitely replicate an 80-plus point season. Just 2 points on the power play so far, so he's generating a ton of 5-on-5 production, which is a great sign for continual gains. He's shooting below his usual 15-16%. He's hanging around 10-11% right now, so more goals are coming. If you don't consider this kid a top asset right now, you should.
Cam, Thomas Tatar obviously came over in the Max Pacioretty trade from the Vegas Golden Knights. He's off to a good start, 8 points in 6 games, including 3 goals. If you're in a league that allows weekly or monthly pickups, do you like Tatar, or are you maybe a little bit cautious based on his start?
Welcome back to Fantasy Relevance, Thomas. So he's kind of left dead after that Vegas debacle where he was getting healthy scratched and just it wasn't a fit. But he's producing well at 5-on-5 as well, you know, same as Rantanen. He's shooting the puck more, so 3.5 per game. Usually hangs around that that 2-shot per game range. He's in a good spot with Gallagher and Dano. He won't keep up this pace, nor will Montreal. So I think Montreal's it's a bit of a mirage themselves. They should be falling down the standings a bit. But I think a return to that 50, 55-point zone is definitely doable. If you have kind of unlimited pickups or, you know, enough to kind of go up and down throughout the season, I'd ride the hot hand while you can. And then when he slows down, cut bait.
You know, Cam, looking over at the Calgary Flames, James, the real deal, Neil, has one goal and one assist in 7 games. How concerned are you with his slow start?
Oh, yeah, very concerned. So Elias Lindholm has locked down the prime ice with Gaudreau and Monahan, which is where everyone wants to be. The Flames put that 3M line back together. So that leaves Neil hanging out with Sam Bennett and Mark Jankowski right now. So not exactly a great spot to produce offense. But at the same time, you know, he's not shooting the puck. He's not getting that power play one time. So for my money, it's time to cut bait on Neil.
Cam Robinson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The flip side, he was a former member of the Calgary Flames, is Carolina Hurricanes winger Michael Ferland, of course a good Manitoba boy. 4 goals, 3 assists, 7 points in 7 games. Even if he doesn't maintain the point-to-game pace, which is you know, pretty reasonable to expect, is he a must-start week in and week out in head-to-head fantasy leagues?
You know, as long as his deployment stays where it is, he's looking like that. So him and Aho and Teravainen are looking really strong together, so he's kind of been a really nice complement to those two smaller skilled players, so he can get in on the forecheck, create a little havoc, turn some pucks over. You know, he's seeing over 2.5 minutes on that top power play, which is huge for continued production. He didn't get that kind of continual deployment when he was in Calgary. He's another one who's shooting the puck a ton, so, you know, nearly 4 per game, or normally he's shooting 2 or less every other season. So I think more hits are coming too. So for a multi-category league, he's a guy you definitely want to target. And in a points-only setup, he's one of these guys. As long as he's seeing that deployment, he can be someone who could long-term put up 50, 60 points in that spot.
Cam, Max Lajoie of the Ottawa Senators, he's a defenseman. He's a player that, quite frankly, most hockey fans haven't heard of, but, you know, with Erik Karlsson moving on to the San Jose Sharks, and you've got some injuries on the back end with Cody Ceci, namely, you know, he's put up some really good numbers, 4 goals, 3 assists in 6 games. You know, if you're in a league which allows those daily pickups or weekly pickups, would you take a flyer on Lajoie, or are you a little bit maybe cautious based on the fact that, you know, he's still a rookie defenseman and, you know, he's putting up pretty uncharacteristic numbers for him?
Yeah, for sure. If you had jumped on him, you know, day 3 of the season and you kind of got to bring in those goals and assists that he's put up so far, then I'd say good on you. But at this point, I think he's a mirage. So he was getting some nice minutes next to CC at even strength. He's on the second power play unit, which is good, but this is a player who doesn't have a history of any real offensive production. So he put up a few points in junior, but nothing major. Right now he's shooting 22%. So for a blue liner, that's going to come crashing down. That's going to crater very quickly. So if you have him, ride the wave while it lasts. I'd probably hesitate to run out and grab him right now because I don't think it's going to last much longer.
Cam, Minnesota Wild forward Zach Parise has quietly had an excellent start to the season with 9 points in 7 games. He has 2 goals, 7 assists. How would you assess his fantasy value, and how concerned are you about his injury history?
Yeah, I actually wrote about him last night in a Dauber Ramblings there. So, you know, he's always been a highly skilled player. So he went and signed that monster contract with the Wild a few years ago, and things haven't really gone his way. But he's always had that ability to go on, you know, nice long stretches of real production. So he's in one of those right now. Like you said, injuries are a major concern with Parise. But, you know, he's in a good spot. So he's playing with some good players. He's getting all the prime ice time as he should. So while he's doing that and while he's healthy, he's a guy that can play at a, you know, 65, 70 plus point pace. So right now he's someone I'd definitely be grabbing if he's on the wire.
Cam Robinson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the fantasy side of the game. Cam, of course, works for Dauber Hockey. You can read his writings there. You know, Cam, you know, it's obviously early in the year. We're only about 3 weeks in, give or take. And, you know, teams have played 6, 7, 8 games somewhere in that vicinity. When do you begin to press the panic button when it comes to certain players that have high expectations that aren't matching them?
Yeah, it depends on the player, I guess. So if it's someone that's kind of a sexy pick to break out or, you know, take a nice leap forward and we're looking 6, 7, 8, 9 games into the season and they haven't, that's someone that I'd be looking at, you know, kind of hovering over the drop button. So Kevin Fiala is a player like that who is pointless in his first 6 games after being pegged to be, you know, a nice little breakout player. He did get a goal and assist last night, so maybe that'll keep people from dropping him too quickly. But yeah, you know, you like to give you like to give them 20 games if you're patient. I'm maybe not as patient as some people. I like to really jump in and grab a hot hand if I can.
Now, Cam, we want to ask you about some players that you believe their stock is rising and some players that their stock is falling. One more player I wanted to ask you about is Jack Roslovic. He's a player that we talk a lot about here in Winnipeg, obviously, former first-round pick back in 2015. He's off to a slow start, and there are a lot of players, as you know, who are off to slow starts in the first six or seven games of the season. But how would you assess his fantasy value right now? He's only got the one assist in seven games, but especially in leagues where you can pick up players and in keeper leagues. I mean, what's your assessment of Roslovic right now?
I like Roslovic. So during the offseason there, I was pegging him as someone who could, you know, step in and maybe be that second-line center and have Brian Little kind of deployed in more of a defensive role. So if he was playing with Line A and Ehlers, I really liked Roslovic to take a step forward. Now, playing on the third line, not going to be conducive for getting a lot of points. So, you know, he's seeing not a lot of ice right now, under 10 minutes, you know, on that second power play unit. So at this point, until his deployment changes, he's someone that I'm not really going to be interested in too much this season. Long term, he's a really skilled player. And I think that he will be that second line center one day, if they decide to move Little down and have him focus on defense. So, he's one definitely to keep an eye on. And, maybe if your team's not set to contend in a keeper league, he's a guy that you can grab and plug, put on your bench and wait in a year or two. Hopefully he's, taking some nice strides.
So, Cam, who are the players that you have that their fantasy stock is rising, and who are a few players that their stock is falling?
Yeah, so a few players. I briefly mentioned him earlier, Elias Lindholm. So, you know, he's got 8 points in his last six games. He's seeing 19 minutes of ice, almost 5 minutes on that top power play per game. So that's as good a spot as you can ask for, really. Obviously, he's shooting, I think, 35% right now, which is a clear mirage, and that's going to come down in a hurry. But he's a player who had the draft stock. High draft pick, so he's that silky skill. He's teased us with 60-plus point upside in the past, and I really like him to push for that this year. I don't think he's moving off that Goodrow line. Another kid, Alex DeBrincat. So just a tremendous goal scorer all the way through junior. Small player, so people questioned him, but you know he's got 6+4 in six games this year already, playing next to a kind of rejuvenated Taves at 5-on-5. He's on the left point on that top power play unit, which is an interesting place for him. Allows him to slide down a little bit and have some more room to shoot, and he's got that ridiculous release. So I think this is a kid that can score 40 one day. It might be this year, so he's for real. Last hot one I'd say is Kyle Palmieri. Sorry, 7 goals in 5 games, just rolling with Hischier and Hall in all situations. So, you know, even strength power play, he's one of these guys that, you know, he's been kind of a waiver wire grab for a few years now, where you can get him while he's hot, and right now he is hot. So I'd definitely be looking at him. Some cold streaks. Derek Steppen, no points in 6 games. He was off the Clayton Keller line. Arizona's been struggling to score, though, and so he's not helping, but they've been getting lots of shots. They've been getting some chances. He's back with Keller now, so if he stays there, maybe there's some hope, but he's definitely trending down. I'd be hitting the drop button. Alex Pietrangelo, long been a stalwart defenseman in fantasy. Last year had a great year. He's pointless in 6 games, -6, just 10 shots on goal. He's off the top power play unit. This is a guy who had triplets in the offseason, so many, myself included, were kind of forecasting this might be a down year or a slow start. If you don't think that having triplets is going to impact your game, you probably don't have kids. So he's one that, you know, maybe you look at buying him cheap and hoping that he rebounds around Christmas when things kind of...
When his kids start to sleep?
Exactly, right? When things start to kind of level out a little bit.
Yeah, like, do we know if Pietrangelo has a nanny? Maybe that'll help?
Oh, I'm sure he does. He's definitely got the money to get a nanny anyways, but that's still not gonna help you in the middle of the night, probably.
Cam Robinson covers the world of hockey for Dauber Hockey. Cam, appreciate your time this evening, or this morning, rather. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, fellas.
Take care, Cam. When we come back, we look around the NHL, some news and notes, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The boys are getting set. They're at Boston Pizza City Place. They'll follow us right afterwards as we lead into the Jets and the Coyotes, a 3 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290.
Rick has had a pierogi pizza yet?
I don't know. I really don't know. You can ask him off air, I suppose.
This is, of course, part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Some news and notes from around the NHL.
You know, Drew, if we could just pause that for a second, I have to give a very special shout out.
Oh, boy.
To my future sister-in-law, Leah. That's my wife's sister.
It is.
And Leah
she's
and
She's actually
Jill.
Your current sister-in-law.
I was
going to
say, she's already your sister-in-law.
Yeah, just for the record,
she's not
your future sister-in-law.
Right.
Yeah.
Jill will be my future brother-in-law, but yes.
That's right.
My current sister-in-law. Yeah. I'm an idiot.
Your future ex-sister-in-law, if you really want to play it out long term.
We got to wish them, it's their wedding today.
Big wedding.
You know, congratulations to Leah and Jill. Looking forward to tonight. It's going to be an awesome time. So I just wanted to get that in there before news and notes.
The real question.
Jill or Gil?
The real question I have, though, is how much Jill.
My sister's name is Gillian. That's what Dave's talking about.
I know,
about.
I got it. I understood it. The audience didn't.
No, how much, you. I mean, I know you got it.
How much Jill is going to be in your hair for the wedding tonight?
Quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm going to put some product in there.
I don't know
if
you've seen, like, on Wednesday for midweek, I don't know if you heard it, this guy comes swathing into
the station. It's a $45 haircut right here.
Oh, I remember. He dropped me off after last week, and he was going to get his fancy haircut.
Yeah, but when he walked in, it was like looking at an 18-year-old stud muffin walking through the doors with that hairdo.
The only problem is I'm 75 pounds heavier than I was when I was 18.
Anyways, some news and notes from around the NHL as we wrap up the program on this Saturday morning. We start with the Vegas Golden Knights. Do we want to start with the good news or the bad news for the Golden Knights?
Good news.
The good news is, at least from the Golden Knights' perspective, is they signed Alex Tuch to a significant contract extension earlier. I believe it was late yesterday that they signed him to a 7-year contract extension, a cap hit of $4.75 million per season that'll take effect next year. Your thoughts on this big contract for Alex Tuch of the Vegas Golden Knights?
I like that contract, Drew, and I think it came out of nowhere a little bit.
Yeah, a little
because
bit.
Because Tuck's got 1 year left on his contract, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but he's a former first-round pick.
Of the Minnesota Wild.
Of the Wild. He didn't really catch on with the Wild,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Vegas takes him
in the expansion draft.
Yeah. He has 15 goals in the regular season, but he added 6 goals. He was very in the playoffs. It's very good for the Vegas Golden Knights in the playoffs. He was on that third line, and you know, maybe you overpay him a little bit in the early years of the contract, but, you know, he's only 22 years old. So when he's 25, 26 years old, and, you know, I expect him to be a 20, 25 goal scorer, you know, you're getting pretty good value there, I think, as salaries rise. So I like that contract signing by George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, because I think what you're doing is you're kind of taking a page out of David Poyle's book with Nashville, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're signing those kind of second line, third line guys to longer term contracts with lower cap hits. So for me, $4.75 million a year for a guy, hey, who knows? He might even hit 30 goals. He's only 22 years old, as I mentioned before. So, you know, that's a really nice signing for the Golden Knights, who have obviously had some, you know, injury problems here the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's almost a shame they didn't have another year that they could have evaluated him and then known.
Watson, going back to the segment back at the top of the third hour about arbitration rights is what Dave's referencing there. You mentioned the injury problems. A significant one bites the Golden Knights. Paul Stastny is going to be out of the lineup probably for 2 months, could be as long as 3 months after he suffers a knee injury. The Golden Knights off to a struggle start this season.
A struggle start?
Struggling to start the season. Shut up.
Or a snuggle start.
By the way, who predicted the Golden Knights were going to fall back down to earth? Couple weeks ago? Was it last week?
It wasn't me, but I don't know.
I think,
was it you?
I think everybody.
Pretty sure it was this guy.
Yeah. Nobody listens. Nobody remembers what we predicted. That's the point of the show, is that we can say one thing, you know, 3 weeks earlier and say the complete opposite thing. Look at those guys. Aren't they geniuses?
Aside from us and maybe our parents, nobody remembers our predictions.
No. And my parents certainly don't remember anything about that.
Yeah. My dad stopped listening to the show.
The Golden Knights, 3-4 on the season so far. The impact of the loss of Paul Stastny on this team, is this a huge blow to the Golden Knights?
I think it's a big blow because they're already without Nate Schmidt. I mean, mm-hmm. he's still serving that 20-game suspension. And I think it's not just because Stastny's the second-line center, Dave, behind William Karlsson. I think it's because they're not scoring right now. Karlsson's not putting the puck in the net at the same rate he was last year. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith on that line, that top line for the Golden Knights, they're struggling. So, you know, Max Pacioretty is another guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he has not got off to a good start.
One point in 7 games.
Right. And it almost kind of reminds you what was happening in St. Louis last year. You remember they got off to the bad start and they had, pardon me, not necessarily at this point in the season, but the middle part of the season, they had some injury problems. So You know, it's unfortunate for Stastny, who was obviously one of the bigger free agent signings, you know, coming over from Winnipeg. The Jets obviously wanted to re-sign him. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, but it's a really unfortunate injury for them.
Well, you know, you look at the Golden Knights and that top line, Marchessault is got 8 points and Carlson's got 7. Riley Smith has 4, but after that, the offense is just absolutely in a tailspin. Nobody's really putting up points at all. I mean, Cody Eakin's got 3 goals and no assists. He's got a great pitching record right now. But after that, it's just, you know, really a struggle offensively for the Golden Knights. It's not going to get made any easier with the loss of Paul Stastny. Another player out of a lineup, Justin Schultz, is going to be out of the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins for the next 4 months after he fractures his leg in a game, I believe, against the Montreal Canadiens last week. The Penguins defense, it's sort of always a bit of a work in progress.
That's a big one for the Penguins, because Justin Schultz really came into his own with the Penguins, you know, obviously winning the Stanley Cup there, but Olli Maatta has been a healthy scratch, and Olli Maatta is struggling right now to find his game. Obviously, Chris Letang is still a top 10 defenseman, in my opinion. Letang has arguably been the Penguins' best player so far this year, but, you know, they're going to lean on guys like Jamie Oleksiak more. I think, you know, he's starting to come into form. Oleksiak's a guy that, you know, also struggled to find his game in Dallas, mm-hmm. and he's coming around, starting to develop. So, you know, you're going to miss him a lot because he's a guy that you can put out there on the power play, and you know he's a guy that can put up some good offensive numbers. So you know the Pens don't have a shortage of guys that can put the puck in the net. We know that Crosby, Malkin, you know, Kessel, and Jake Guentzel, I mean, these guys are going to consistently put up big points. But Schultz is a guy that you know moves the puck really well, and they depend on the back end. So you know he's going to miss the majority of the season, and that's really unfortunate. You wonder if Jim Rutherford maybe looks at making a move.
Well,
here.
I was going to say that Jim Rutherford's a guy who always likes to strike early when it comes to making a trade. You wonder if with the loss of Schultz, and they've put him on LTIR, so they do get the salary cap relief as a result, you wonder if he's looking to fill that position on their back end earlier rather than later, given that Schultz will be out for at least 4 months, and who knows how quickly, it could be longer than that. You're talking about a guy coming back from a significant leg injury, so it'll be interesting to see what the Penguins do with that injury. Some other news, Nick Ritchie finally signs that contract with the Anaheim Ducks. It's a 3-year contract extension, or pardon me, a contract with the Ducks. It pays him $1.64 million per season. Pardon me, it doesn't pay him that. It's 3 years, $4.6 million per season, so the salary cap hit is around $1.6 per year. This has been one of the most bizarre contract disputes in a while that we've seen, given that Nick Ritchie isn't much of a player, hasn't turned into much of a player, and then he eventually signs a long-term deal at this relatively low dollar figure.
Well, I don't know if I would say he hasn't turned into much of a player. I mean, I don't think that he's ever going to be a 40-goal scorer in the NHL, but he's actually been a pretty good power forward for the Ducks.
He got 10 goals last year. I mean, he got 10 goals last year. He had 14 goals the year before, so he's a double-digit goal scorer in and around 30 points. Maybe he's got a little bit more upside.
True, he's 22 years old.
Can you explain to me why what the holdout was, or not the holdout, but the contract?
But I'm just saying. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Ritchie scores between 15 or 20 goals, you know, in the next couple of years. I'm just saying. I mean, I think everybody looks at where a guy's drafted. And he was a high draft pick. And
10th overall.
Right. And they say, okay, well, why isn't he scoring 30 goals? Well, not every 10th overall draft pick is going to score 30 goals in the NHL. I'm just saying, I think he's a good player.
And I'll withdraw my comments if you'll talk about why this contract took so long to come to.
Well, I don't know. And when you're, I really don't. I mean, and I really don't know why William Nylander hasn't signed. I mean, I know that he's asking for too much money, and the Leafs are obviously, you know, offering somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million or whatever it is, and he probably wants closer to $7 million. But, you know, Nick Ritchie certainly isn't at the same level as William Nylander. But, you know, it's good for him that he got signed, because the Ducks are off to a really good start, Drew, mm-hmm. and I think he wants to be a part of it.
Yeah. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests, Cam Robinson, Logan Stanley, Mark Dumont, Craig Morgan, and Jason Bell. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Alex, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for more Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.